Donegal has some of the most beautiful gardens in the country and a rich tradition of garden making that stretches back to monastic times and spans the county from the Fannet Peninsula to Donegal Bay. But these gardens are much more than beautiful spaces. Behind neat hedges and through the flower borders hide 100 stories of our history, our garden making, and the magnificent obsessions that inspire people to make and maintain these Edens. My name is Mary Brophy, and I'm once again heading down the garden path to explore six more of Donegal's best-loved gardens. From a farmed landscape to private havens, in this second series, I'll be considering what it means to garden in a time of climate crisis and biodiversity loss.
You could actually smell the burning last year. I thought the geraniums would never come back again, you know, but they did.
And experience the stunning plants and trees that inhabit these spaces.
These are Schefflerias, so these are native to Taiwan. They're relatively new on the scene.
As I discover how we can create beautiful, productive spaces that work for both wildlife and people.
We have such little problems with pests. There is a balance. It's not a monoculture.
And how we might evolve our definition of what a garden is or can become.
Gardens can be absolutely anything your imagination wants them to be.
Today, in our first episode, I've made my way up the coast to Falkara to visit an incredibly beautiful and unique garden that was motivated by a deep desire to attract more birds, pollinators, and wildlife into an old farm.
Rule of thumb is what's good for nature will be very welcome here. That's why I started this.
This is Seamus O'Donnell, and we're at Clún na Dór, the garden and plant nursery he and his wife Deirdre Brennan have created out of a wet and windswept farmland over three decades.
My grandfather went on the Klondike rush, gold rush. So he was able to make his fortune, come back, buy the farm and build his house. So as I say, these were the only trees that were here. This is the west wind, so I had to build up these lines of defence, give me shelter to allow me to do what? I didn't know what.
You were going to do.
No, I just knew I wanted shelter. I knew I wanted more animals, I wanted more birds, I wanted more insects. We're heading for the exotic garden. So that the exotic garden was my first garden. So that was because it was already surrounded by sycamore trees, so it had a degree of shelter there.
Oh, wow. Okay, so we're coming through the sycamores here, and I'm just getting glimpses of what looks like an entirely different world, Seamus.
Yeah, well, that's the whole purpose. The whole purpose is to transport you to another world.
This is very Jurassic almost.
This exotic foliage garden, as it's known, is an immediate sensory overload. It is at once atmospheric, romantic, strange, and beautiful. And I'm eager to discover just how Seamus conjured up this magical space here among these sycamores.
I get great fun out of finding out nice combinations of plants. So you see the black of the mondograss mirrors the black stems of the black bamboo. And then earlier in the season, I had snowdrops coming up through the black mondograss. They died down, and then it was anemones. Beautiful anemones. So they came up, and then they did their thing in the way they went, and now we're just left with the lovely mondograss.
Yeah.
So there is a skill, and you don't learn that overnight, about what looks nice with other plants, you know.
Yeah.
It doesn't clash. I like the sort of big trunks, you know. I just like that idea. So I've used that quite a bit around. So I just feel, you know, that you can create this sort of cathedral, you know. Yes. It's a sanctuary and it's a quiet space. So this was the first garden I cleaned up, and that took a winter.
And
just one winter, but you know,
hard work.
it's just full on. And then what I had was cuttings. I just planted this whole garden with cuttings. So this was the beginning of my horticultural sort of business.
Really, yes.
So I had the hedging. It was all bare root hedging. So again, like I was...
Where were you getting the cuttings from?
Well, actually, do you know what? I was travelling as far as Bundoran. We're in Falkara here, to Bundoran and Carrickfinn. I think it was actually in Bundoran, it was Finner Camp that I was after some cuttings, but that just shows you how few hedges were the suitable ones that I was after. And I would have spent years sourcing all this information, and I say in the days we're in now, that could be done in a month or two, you know, because all information is on your phone.
Fundamentally, this garden is a place that is designed to be in. On this soft day, the large leaves play a delicate music of raindrops in varying keys. Narrow paths disappear in the exotic foliage, so plants almost reach out their fronds and branches to you as you brush past.
Yeah, just that jungle effect as well, you know. So we've got gingers here, Cattleya robusta, and then we've got ferns. I think ferns are so useful in the garden for adding that natural touch.
And are these gingers in all year round?
Yes, they are.
You don't have an issue with frost?
No, I think, like actually last year we had no frost at all.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I think having the moisture and the mild temperate weather, we have just a great palette of plants that we can use.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
The Gulf Stream is part of that as well.
Very, very much so.
Yeah.
The Gulf Stream is what gives us the type of weather we have, you know, this mild temperate zone we're in. And God knows if that changes direction, we're in for a big shake up.
I think it's really important as well. Like, I mean, there is a lot of talk in the last year or so, and you see it a lot in the UK press and media, where they're, you know, the English country garden is under threat, and they've been saying that for 20 years because of climate change. But I also, like, I'm starting to see now this kind of new sense of adaptation.
Yes.
And how can we start to adapt our gardens and start to think about them? Is that something that's beginning to come into your thinking yet?
Well, we've had a pretty wet summer here, unfortunately. The fact that it's peaty and wet ground that I'm gardening on anyway, I'm in that sort of...
You're ahead of the curve.
Yeah, I think so, you know. And so I don't grow lavender, you know, or rosemary.
Or rosemary.
So I think it's common sense, really, that you're just using plants that have acclimatized to growing in wet conditions, where whatever part of the world they are from, you know. But I just want to point out these plants here. These are Schefflera's. So these are native to Taiwan. So they're relatively new on the scene, you know, because it was plant collectors with a nursery in Wales that have been collecting or sourcing these plants.
Right, yeah. This one here with the very definite umbrella shape.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful above the Astilbe.
That's only in the ground maybe 2 years or so.
Really,
you know.
Yeah.
And this is an interesting plant here. This is Pseudopanax crassifolium from New Zealand, lancewood tree.
And such an exaggerated, you know, serrated leaf and long, thin. It's a beautiful.
Yeah, the whole purpose of the leaf shape here was to prevent browsing animals from eating it. And then as the tree matures, then the leaf shape changes.
Of course.
So that's because the animal can't reach up at the top. So I think that's fascinating as
it
well,
is.
You know. And our own native holly tree does that. If you see, it's all jaggedy leaf at the bottom, but at the top of the tree, a smooth leaf.
This is a garden of gems, a Jurassic-sounding Brassiopsis with its wonderful foliage, that Pseudopanax lancewood, a myrtle tree, and foxglove or empress tree all sit happily together in this glade. And as well as being beautiful, these trees and oversized foliage serve another important purpose. They provide amazing cover for wildlife, especially the birds.
In the springtime, the chorus, the bird chorus, was just fascinating. It was so beautiful. And I think it gets more beautiful every year because you're learning the names of the birds, you're learning the songs, you know, or you know what bird that is.
Yeah.
And that's it's incredible. And you know, like, that's, as I said, that's why I started this off, is what can I do to attract the wildlife. So it's happening. So I don't mind, like, you know, there's a case of, like, do you plant exotic plants in your garden to attract wildlife? I think it'll take everything, you know. If you can get the bumblebee on a ginger from the Himalayas, that's great.
We move next to the bird garden, so called because it features a beautiful sculpture of a cormorant with wings outstretched by the artist Ewan Berry. The planting is set against a dramatic backdrop of a large moon sculpture by Andrew O'Doherty, and once again, it's clear the design doesn't have to be compromised in an effort to cultivate biodiversity and create habitats for wildlife. Seamus explains the concept.
Well, I wanted to have a watery theme, I suppose, you know. So at the start, I created these mounds. So, like, see this one here has got a... This is higher, and then it gets a wee bit lower, and then the next wee mound. So they're symbolising waves. So then where the cormorant is, with its wave, where there's wings outstretched...
There's a beautiful sculpture right in the centre.
Yeah, so that's the wee island, the outcrop, you know. So that's the whole idea, that I had planned to grow lots of fine grasses, you know, that would give you the idea that it was the water or the sea, you know, and it's lashing up against the wee islands. And the plan was to have lots of white, flowery, silvery plants, you know, to give you the idea of froth or that effect, you know, of the when the water beats up against the wee island.
It's actually really playful, the mounds. It just goes in and around. It's quite imaginative.
Well, it's natural, you know. I'm trying to have a natural look as well and avoid straight lines, I suppose. But what we have, probably the feature plant, is the Cotinus, the smoke bush, which is a stunner altogether. And I position my plants a lot to get the evening light.
Yes.
You know, so the
backlit.
Yeah, backlit.
Yeah, and through the smoke bush, that lovely auburny colour, it just lights up like on fire.
Fascinating,
yeah.
You know, and even there's a wee drizzle here today now, but you can see the droplets on the leaf, you know, and that's like magical as well in its own way.
Talk to me about some of the grasses that you used here.
Well, here we have Hakanokloa, which is a Japanese grass.
The forest grass.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, I have to think of ground cover as well, because I've got a big area here, so I have to use plants that are going to maintain themselves, really, you know. So.
And that's one of those plants that starts in a small starts as quite a small clump, but it really does spread, lovely wave, you know, effect,
yes.
Actually.
And it's, again, the movement, and you'll have autumn colour as well. And we have our Stipa tenuissima. We have Kyonocloa rubra, which is one of the hardiest grasses there is for around this part of the world. And, you know, like, they can be a metre high and a metre and a half wide. So they originate in the mountains of New Zealand, so they're very, very capable of taking the wind and the weather conditions here.
And what's lovely looking at it is that you have the contrast then with these ferns going through in terms of textural contrast.
Yeah.
You're still keeping the mound.
That's true. But you know what? It's all about wildlife, you know. It's like you might have the grasses that you mightn't think they're much good for wildlife, but they create cover, you know. That's where insects and little mammals need places to hide as well. So there should be really no bare earth, you know, no brown earth.
Yes.
Should be all covered, yeah. You know, and not covered with gravel. But even there's moss, like a native moss, growing in there.
I see it, and it just creates this beautiful little feathery effect lower down, and it draws your eye to it each time.
Yeah, wee hummocky areas, you know, and, like, I didn't plant that. So sometimes plants will arrive as well, and I allow them to make their homes there. Like this fern here, that's a native fern.
Yes.
So that will remain. You see, the other thing about gardens is that there should be a surprise element, you know. It's not all seen at the one go. So you should be able to turn around a corner and there's something new. And there should be the wow factor, you know, as well. Like sometimes, like I, you know, when I have forgotten about plants and what they do, and then I come around one day and I do exclaim. I do sort of say wow, like out loud, you know. So... You know, and that's always a lovely surprise. So the surprise element is always very, very important to have in the garden.
So where are we heading to now, Seamus?
We're heading for the pond garden.
We've come into a more open area of the garden. It feels looser here. You're greeted by a playful spiral maze cut out of long grass and rushes. And as we make our way to the pond garden, we're joined by Deirdre.
It's well documented now if young kids grow tomatoes in a classroom or sunflowers. I mean, they really take care of those.
Yes.
And there's
yes.
a connection. So I suppose I wanted them to connect with nature.
In 2015, Deirdre began inviting local schools into the gardens as part of an art education project called Art, Earth and Environment. Here, groups of 8 to 12-year-olds get to learn about nature and biodiversity in this living classroom.
There's a wealth of beautiful wildlife in our own native area, and we should learn about it. Mm. And also the most important thing is Tomáis Eugenio in Gaelic. So I speak Gaelic, so there's not an awful lot of people doing this through the Irish language. And all the local schools are Irish speaking. So they need somebody to do it.
And isn't it a lovely thing in Irish? There's so many phrases in Irish for nature and they actually encapsulate the quality of the bird or animal
yes.
or the plant.
Yes.
It's the most amazing resource, even in the language.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, some of the words are very like, you know, the ri rua is the chaffinch, you know, or they're just beautiful words, and they actually almost identify the actual thing with the word, if you know what I mean. What Seamus is doing here is it's a sanctuary, really, for not alone bird life and wildlife, but for people. People need somewhere to go now. There's mental health problems, people have stress. So this is a place to come, chill, and it's the same with the kids. They can come and spend the day with me and learn how to do it.
And no place better encapsulates that idea of sanctuary in this garden than the pond. Banks of grasses trim the water. Delicate pink flowerheads wave in the wind. Insects land and take off from a water lily pad. And on one side, a seat perfectly positioned to take it all in.
It was an experiment because I wasn't sure whether the water would remain. And I didn't want to use plastic liner.
Okay.
So what we did was we just made the pond half the size of what it is now. The first year. So that was a total success. And then the following year, then I just increased the size of it. So I think the pond is the biggest magnet in the whole garden for wildlife.
And how did you make it? Like, to describe...
Oh, just a digger. Just a digger. So that's your water table.
Okay.
So that's how far you have to go to get some water.
Yeah, well, we're squelching through it here as it is. So from where we're standing now, what's dominating the centre is a beautiful water lily.
Yeah.
And to just around the edge here to our right, are there bulrushes?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, gorgeous.
In the water, you mentioned the lily, the pond lily. Well, ponds need a bit of darkness as well, or for places for the wildlife to hide and be secure and sheltered. So that's the purpose of the pond lily. And then we have the bog bean. There's a wee bit
yes,
of bog bean over
just
there.
To the right,
and
yeah.
I'm delighted with that because that's taken a while to get moving. I just have this association with bog bean because we would have been given bog bean as a tonic, you know, when we were younger.
Really?
Oh yeah, it was a big tonic in the springtime.
So this was like your whole mission to get wildlife in really came together, isn't it, Seamus?
It's incredible that the wildlife that the pond does attract. Like, we have long-eared owls here as well. But I would have noticed the bat flying around the top of the pond, and then every so often it would scoop down and just have a wee sip of water. But anyway, I was just contemplating, and I heard this sort of a wing noise, you know, a wing beat sound, and what I seen then, the owl was approaching the bat with the claws outstretched, and I think it was just me looking up at the bat and the owl that disorientated the owl and it lost concentration, and the bat got away anyway. So that was the good news. But just, I think you have to go into a garden to sit and stay silent for a while. You just don't breeze about the place, you know, because you won't see those sort of things if you don't sit still for a while.
And a lot of that's the one thing about a garden as well, that a garden is not just for daylight hours. Going out into a garden in the gloaming,
absolutely,
at, like particularly this time of year when you will see the owls, like if you're out at 10 o'clock at night,
that's
it's
right.
still bright enough.
Yeah. Well, there's still loads of activity.
And you're getting to see that.
Yeah, and even in the meadow, I would be particularly interested in sort of discovering moths, you know, but that's another time of the day that life is like. In the gardens, there's a lot happening during the night time as well.
And another thing that we can do as gardeners is create plants and a habitat for that entire world
absolutely.
As well, like those the white plants that they're attracted
that's
to,
true.
The night-scented plants.
Yes, like, you know, honeysuckle is great for attracting the moths, valerian, but, you know, even the grasslands, you know, you're going to get lots of moths in the meadows as well, and we don't see them at all.
Do you sit here often?
Well, I do in the evening time. I'll get a move over here and I'll take me time to leave, you know.
And we just sit?
I just sit checking it out. No, I think you have to be in touch, you know, just listen and just forget about the worries of the world, and there's no better place to be than in the garden to be at one with nature, for sure.
You've said a number of times that bringing nature was your goal.
Yeah.
Why was it so important to you?
Well, I suppose it gave me a particular sense of satisfaction, maybe, and joy and admiration, and understanding the dangers that they're all under as well, you know, that we're here to leave a planet that should be the same as we got it, you know, but I'm afraid it's not as we found it. So it's up to every individual to do the smallest wee bit to contribute to nature, you know, and that can mean just planting one oak tree, which would be of immense value, you know. So I suppose as time goes on, I feel maybe I can inspire more people that it is worthwhile and it is possible. Right plants, you know, that it's not about time, it's not about not seeing it mature, it's about just doing it and showing a good example. And I am totally aware that it's very time consuming, you know, but I think it's so rewarding. If it's one tree or one bush, you know, I think it's just magical, you know, and if you tune into that wee thing you've planted, you know, like it'll open up another world, and then throw in the wildlife that's attracted to it, that's another bonus.
Next time on Down the Garden Path.
It was a terrifying flood, and it ripped through there, the heart of the park, you know.
Yeah.
So so everything you look at here is kind of well put back as best we could to the original.
Down the Garden Path is written and presented by Mary Brophy and produced by Neil Boyle. It is an IWR media production for Highland Radio, funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee.